Welcome to the Brand the Interpreter podcast. I am your host, Mireya Perez, and this platform is dedicated to sharing the stories of language professionals, that is, the interpreters and translators from around the world. This show aims to highlight not just the profession, but mainly the people behind the amazing work. These are your stories about our profession, and this is the Brand the Interpreter podcast. Welcome back, language professionals from around the world. Hope you're doing well. If you're a new subscriber to the Brand the Interpreter podcast, welcome and thank you for joining me today. Today's episode has become one of my favorites because I learned so much from today's guest. Jamie Cook is a completely blind Spanish interpreter. She was born at 26 weeks gestation, survived 68 days in the NICU, had 11 eye surgeries between 9 months and 3 years of age. She fell in love with the Spanish language at the age of 5 when her mom taught her a few words, so much so that she began studying audio tapes in such depth that by the time she got to high school and enrolled herself in Spanish classes, it was basically a review for her, she says. She earned her MA from UNC Chapel Hill. She's also an amazing advocate for accessibility of the visually impaired, but specifically for those in the language industry. In her spare time, she enjoys cooking, reading, singing, walking, or spending quality time with her dog. So, without further ado, please welcome Jamie Cook to the show. Jamie, welcome to Brand the Interpreter. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for the invitation. I'm eager to see that what all I can teach maybe, or what all I can learn either way. So.
Yes, I'm excited actually to be able to share your story and of course honored to be able to do it here on this platform. So I'd like to begin by asking you, what did you aspire to be when you grew up?
So at first I wanted to be a teacher because I loved learning very much and I had really wonderful teachers and didn't really know how blessed I was to have such great teachers until I reached college and ran into students from different parts of the country who did not have the same educational experience as I had. So that was really eye-opening to me.
The same educational experience. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and was extremely fortunate to be mainstreamed from preschool through high school. So I went to my local public schools. Braille books and audio texts were provided to me by the state and what was then known as Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. It is now known as Learning Ally. And back in the day, they would use audio cassettes. And you would find a double beep for a chapter and a single beep for a page. And even in college, I taught my readers this recording method so that I could have findable audio texts. That the Disability Services Director, I remember, had people start recording, and I finally brought a stack of tapes back to her and said, I need you to use this method and this tape recorder because I am spending 2/3 of my time finding my homework and 1/3 doing it. So
for those that are listening, Jamie, tell us about your disability that don't know, for those that don't know what your disability is.
So I was born at 26 weeks gestation and spent 68 days in the NICU. And developed retinopathy of prematurity, which they have thought is caused by too much exposure to oxygen in the incubator. They now do a lot of eye exams for preemies so as to just keep track of how things are going. But this was back in the early 1980s. I, in fact, have a little network of scars from all the little heel pricks. Wow. This was pre-pulse oximeter days. And then I, from the age of 9 months through 3 years, had a total of 11 eye surgeries that were ultimately unsuccessful in reattaching my detached retinas. So I grew up totally blind.
Thank you for sharing that. And what was that experience like for you as a child? Tell us a little bit about how you felt in terms of being out there in the world, potentially with other kids in school. What was that like growing up for you?
Mostly, it was a very positive experience. In preschool, the teachers were horrified when I wanted to push Laura, a child who, in a wheelchair, around the circular track. But it worked out great because she could direct me and I could push the wheelchair. And so once they realized we were just collaborating and there was nothing, strange that was going to happen, we had a blast. And because I got mad because she couldn't ride the tricycles. And I was like, we're gonna do this. And we were best friends, and we would run to each other every morning, and that was awesome. Did I run into some bullying? Yes, occasionally. But I had a lot of eager classmates who were there, very willing to help me. So, whether it was sighted guide through the lunch line or as we moved classrooms, I did receive orientation and mobility training throughout elementary, middle, and high school, which is the name for the teaching that shows a blind person how to use a cane. And ultimately, I got a dog when I graduated with my master's from UNC because I have some alignment issues, and it's just much easier. Granted, very different, but much easier for me to travel with the dog, as far as mental mapping, crossing streets, lining up properly, that sort of thing.
When your family found out that the surgeries were going to be unsuccessful, what did your grandfather say?
He said, "Oh, well, Jamie's just going to learn in a different way than other people, but she's going to learn right along with them."
And that was, in fact, how it went for you in terms of being able to get through school. I mean, you just mentioned yourself right now, you got through your master's program, and it was just a matter of learning differently, correct?
Yes. And the collaboration through all the way through my schooling, through high school especially, was really wonderful. I struggled with math, and I later learned that that is a common struggle for preemies.
Yeah. Oh, really? I was going to say, well, see, I have no excuse because I was going to say, yeah, I mean, don't we all?
I think language professionals maybe more than others, but oh yes, my grandfather grew up with a carpenter for his father, and so he learned that I would need tactile toys. So I got his permission to give this counter that he had painted bright red to a young lady who was blind, and I think she was about maybe two at the time, but he made big red beads, and they would go on sticks, and I could count, put one bead and then two beads all the way to five. And then he made a screen board, which is basically a picture frame with tape on the back of it and a piece of screen in it. And you can draw lightly with crayon or pencil, and the lines will be raised. I used that learning my capital letters, even in geometry and biology. Incredibly useful piece of equipment. And one of my dear friends had a house fire, and he'd made me two of them, and she lost everything. So I gave one of them to her, because I knew she would need it.
Wow. So you ended up learning a second language. Walk us through how this occurred and how this was a bit different for you with your different ability.
So I just fell in love with Spanish at the age of five when my mom taught me a few words. She was not fluent, but had learned some growing up in a tiny town in East Texas. And my parents probably had to beg the Library for the Blind to let me keep the tapes that I was studying. And I was studying them so intently that my dad figured out a way to duplicate them. And So I studied and worked on trying to perfect my accent from the age of about 7 until 13 or so, when I could finally start formally studying Spanish in high school. And I tell people that I learned new vocabulary, I learned how to spell properly, and I learned grammar, the names of different grammar things, but spent most of my high school Spanish bored out of my mind.
Why?
Because I had taught myself so much. And so I didn't have that experience of a non-native speaker walking into the classroom knowing nothing, which was really nice, actually,
Yeah, so you were
because,
advanced already by the time that you got in
yes.
there. And then did you continue your studies after high school?
Oh, I did. So I took through Spanish 4 in high school, and we got to do a little teaching, and I was able to collaborate with my classmates in Spanish 4, and that was fun. But then I went to Maryville College, which is a small college very close to the Smoky Mountains National Park, about a 20-minute drive from Knoxville. And it's an amazing school. I could, again, wax eloquent for a long time about how wonderful going to a small liberal arts college was. It was a good transition from one main high school building, some outbuildings, and the vocational building to learning a whole small campus. And it was the first time that I was on my own, so I was only 20 minutes from home if I needed something. But I was able to live in the dorm, and I got a significant scholarship. They're big on financial aid there. And was able to study Spanish, and but a lot was very different. I had to, if I wanted something in Braille in undergrad at least, I would have to produce it myself. So I used a whole lot of the audio texts from Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, which is now Learning Ally, as I mentioned. And because of I noticed that some of my classmates were struggling in second year Spanish and said, "Hey, if anybody wants to come to my dorm room, I can't loan these tapes out, but you can certainly come and listen to the story you've just read and see if that helps." And one woman took me up on it, and she was a sophomore, junior, maybe, anyway. But she also attended the Venezuelan exchange program a year before I did. So, and I wasn't sure what Braille and access to text was going to be in a foreign country. So I wrote a really long email to the coordinator of Venusa, who was in Miami, and she ultimately got back in touch with my Spanish advisor, Dr. Elizabeth Perez Riley, and said, "We want Jamie to have a companion." Well, right about that time, disability services was changing for the better. We had a new person coming in, and they worked it out through Voc Rehab to pay her for reader hours. And so on August 20th of 2002, I flew down. It was my last day in the US. I flew down on the 21st to Merida. And oh, what a lovely experience. And my heart aches for all the Venezuelans who have been enduring this strange and horrible transition that has happened since Chavez was in power. But I, Sarah had a big backpack, and we carried around the printed texts, and she would read to me at night. And at the time, I had a Braille speak, which I don't currently have with me because it's so old. It's probably sitting in a box somewhere. But it was a glorified DOS word processor with a calculator and a clock and a timer and a few other tiny little bells and whistles. But it was very portable. The only way I had of producing Braille while I was in Venezuela was with a direct Braille slate, which I will turn around. Whoops, once I get these pieces of paper detached. Here we go. So the clip here will hold a piece of paper in place. And a traditional slate and stylus has a point on the stylus and holes in the board. And Larry Hawk invented this direct braille slate and did the exact reverse with a hole in the stylus and points on the board, allowing a braille reader to read and write braille from left to right. The slate that is known about more popularly in literature from Lewis Braille's time is actually mirror image braille. So you're writing everything backwards from right to left, from right to left, and there's a pointed stylus and there's indentions in the slate board itself. So you have to flip the paper over in order to read what you're writing. And I envy the generation that came before me because they can go as fast on a slate and stylus, a traditional slate and stylus, as I can with, say, my Android Braille tablet or my Braille display or other Perkins, other technologies that write Braille. So
amazing. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. At some point, you are given the opportunity to utilize your language skills, your bilingual language abilities now in a more professional setting, right? So talk to us about that opportunity and what that did for you personally.
So I think I was a junior in high school or maybe even a sophomore. And my mother was a medical librarian that worked closely with a lot of the local hospitals, and someone from the hospital nearest her called up and said, "Hey, we've got a patient in the maternity department, and could Jamie come and interpret or visit with her?" And so I did. And that same year, I had joined a conversation group of women from the Knoxville area. And so in order to get my speaking ability where my reading and writing ability was, because thank God I learned with the audiolingual method. I'll get into that a little bit more as to why that's so important in a moment. But so I started out as a patient visitor, then became a substitute interpreter for Patricia Neal Rehab Center in Knoxville. And then when I got to Maryville College, my wonderful advisor found me all sorts of jobs that got me broadening my vocabulary into mortgage and insurance and all kinds of different things that some of the time it was just a one-off opportunity, but it was great because I could keep my skills up. And then, so I was like, wow, this is really neat. And I was a TA at Maryville College and had a sighted colleague working alongside me to do things like flashcards and VCR equipment and that kind of thing. When I moved to my master's at UNC, it was going to be the first time I was living alone, several hours away from home. And here I was able to interpret for the SHAC clinic, which I believe is the Student Health Alliance Coalition. They have a free clinic that meets on Wednesdays. And the list moderator wrote to all of us it was a few years ago, and said, you know, we're going to have to just use people affiliated with UNC. And I wrote her back and said, I understand why you're having to do that, but doggone it, it was so cool to sit in a room with a whole bunch of people from all different majors, all different walks of life. And the one thing we had in common was that we spoke Spanish. So that helped me keep my skills up. And then I graduated in 2010 and got wrote to and spoke with my mentors and said, hey, I'm between grad school and my first job. Would this be a good time to get a guide dog? And they absolutely emphatically said yes. So I was flown to Morristown, New Jersey, the campus of the Seeing Eye, and met Abner 2 weeks later. And he retired in 2017, I guess it was. And then I was matched with my successor dog, Russell, in September of that year. So they actually got to meet each other, which is cool.
Oh, that is cool. How lovely. Yeah. Eventually, you went from in-person assignments at these medical settings into OPI over the phone interpreting.
Yes.
Walk us through how that came to be and how this has changed things for you in terms of being able to continuously provide this service up until this day.
Well, I want people to have a good experience, you know, with a helpful professional interpreter, no matter the modality. And secondly, I did not have to walk people through why I needed this equipment or that. And I could work from home. So after I got Abner, then it was 2011. It was about 6 months after I graduated. I was literally looking on Craigslist and I found a job working Pacific night shift for Pacific interpreters. And I thought, this ought to be interesting because I'd worked primarily day shift sorts of things before. And I did indeed learn things there that I could not have learned working day shift. And I was able to pick up some day shift hours when they were busier as well. So I got to know a lot of great people. They were very understanding, and so sadly, they got bought out by LanguageLine in 2013. But to anybody who knew me from Pacific, I really enjoyed my time working there. And then in grad school, again, I was having to produce my own Braille. And although if I needed a book scanned or a test Brailled, they would do that. But I loved teaching, but just didn't quite have enough collaboration to make a go of it. And it was me chasing one accessibility challenge only to be confronted with another, such as the campus email system was not very accessible. And I was using a server that I had access to from my travels. And then I got locked out of the server and couldn't reach the lesson plans that I'd made and things like that. So after I got out of college with my master's, I thought, gee, what am I going to do? And then landed this interpreting gig. And my mom kept up with a lot of publications and, of course, being a medical librarian, and was able to send me something on the medical certification. And I took the training through the Charlotte AHEC. So traveled with Abner at that time. It's such a blessing. I can take Amtrak from here to Charlotte. I'm in Chapel Hill now. Well, Carrboro, a suburb of Chapel Hill. It was really interesting to be able to pick up and travel like that. And a guide dog, again, is a huge help in unfamiliar environments.
You did your training, and then where did you get your certification?
So I think I took the written test in Raleigh, and I took the oral in Charlotte again. And Abner was famous for snoozing through all those. In fact, at one point I was recording and he was, you know, dream barking, woof, woof, woof. And I thought, oh, that's going to give the grader something fun to listen to. Anyway, so yes. And again, in a testing situation, they don't like to allow any technology that they don't recognize. So I took a picture of a tablet similar to the one I have on my desk here a couple of models ago. And they said, oh, you can't use that. And it's like, okay, I really can't. There are switches that I can turn off for not accessing the internet, for not accessing Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. You know, why? Because on a slate and stylus, you produce Braille one dot at a time. On a Perkins Braille writer or Perkins style keyboard, such as the ones I have on my Braille display for my computer or this tablet, you produce Braille a character at a time. So you're able to hit several keys at once. And it's just more efficient, mm-hmm. I find. Mm-hmm. So when I go into a testing environment, I have to be very well prepared because I have to use my memory more than I ordinarily would, you know, and really be able to pick out, okay, what are the testers looking for here? And so, you know, for instance, there was a medical thing where they were giving a phone number, and I realized, okay, they want accurate interpretation of this phone number. And then the site translation section, at the time I was certified, they did not have a simultaneous section. So I was talking with a friend who I had met through the roundtable list, which is a list for blind interpreters, translators, and their interested professors. She was out in California, and I said, hey, what do you do for site translation? And she told me about a lawsuit that had gone through from a person from a different country. This was pre-2016, pre-UEB, United English Braille, when each English-speaking country had its own Braille code. So in this precedent, the person had come from a different country, was given something in grade 2 Braille, which was the contracted or short form Braille code used in the United States at that time, and sued because he couldn't read it. And so I couldn't just say to the testing agency, okay, I need you to contact Metrolina Agency for the Blind and have somebody Braille print this for me. Emboss it is the formal title of how you say print something out in Braille. But so I was like, oh my goodness, this is not good. And so I was asking Anna, what do I do? And she said, well, you're going to usually replace it with another simultaneous section. So you're going, okay. So in other words, I'm going to have to do the site translation from the proctor reading to me. And I knew we were going to run out of time. I just knew it because it was several paragraphs and we had some trouble with the software at the beginning. And sure enough, I lost like 12 points on that section. Wow. And it was just irksome because had I had it in Braille, I would not have messed up so much.
Yeah, which brings up the issue of accessibility for a lot of these opportunities, right?
Yes.
If you could sit on a panel, which I'm certain that by now it potentially already exists of some sort, right? But if you could sit on a panel for these certifying bodies for interpreting, I love the fact that there's a round table, by the way, of blind interpreters and translators, which I'm sure has produced significant amount of discussions around this topic. But for those that are listening to this for the first time and sort of imagining how these services could potentially be more accessible, what would you say in terms of an individual that would be coming in with the same needs as you yourself and your experience? What would be those certain factors that they should be looking out for to make this more accessible?
Number one, cut through the red tape at the testing centers and make sure that people get the accommodations they asked for as close as you can get. So, for instance, another totally blind friend of mine in the field of computer science had indicated to the testing agency, okay, I need a reader to sit at the computer and read me the written test and click the mouse. He showed up and they said, oh, we've got a great big monitor for you. And he said, I'm totally blind. It's not going to help me. So he'd probably already paid the testing fee and ended up having to cancel last minute because the inappropriate accommodations were in place. The testing centers make me take a picture of a Braille tablet or a Braille display or something that I am much more, as I say, efficient at using. And they see a keyboard they don't recognize and they say, oh, you can't use this. So the testing centers need to educate themselves about what is out there, about the fact that most Braille displays are slave devices, which means they plug into a computer and work through a screen reader. Nowadays, some Braille displays have a scratch pad function, but again, there's a way to turn that off. So that's huge. I actually know of a fellow interpreter who requested a reader, and I don't know how they got Armenian interpreter out of reader, but this very nice Armenian interpreter ended up reading her the test. You know, if I had my druthers, I would love testing centers to have screen reading technology on board that was kept up to date at least one computer per regional site at a minimum. Same for magnification software. Same for if a dyslexic person needs Kurzweil 3000, a scan and read program, you know, whatever. People just, they need to try to learn about what's out there and that, no, I am not going to go into a testing environment and try to, you know, cheat or something. That's just not who I am. And I understand the logic of why certain technologies are not allowed in. But if people, you know, after I took the certification exam, for instance, someone was able to take it with an iPad. And I said, wait a minute, that's not entirely fair because I was made to bring in a slate and stylus.
Yeah.
So that's the huge piece. The other piece, which I actually had the pleasure and honor to participate in the beginning, was one of the folks who was really in charge of the CMI, NBCMI exam, reached out to me and said, could you help talk us through, you know, could you get to know these other candidates with visual impairment, see what they're going to need, and we'll schedule a time and you, I, and the candidate will meet and we'll talk through potential accommodations. And I did get to help a few people, and that was really amazing.
That's amazing.
But I cannot tell you how frustrating it is to deal with a testing center, not just a proctor. The proctors were really great, but the actual overseeing testing agency like Prometric or something, and they don't have a clue what I need.
Yeah. In addition to having these accessibility features for you once you're there, as an interpreter, now a certified interpreter, and you're going out to sites sometimes, correct? Tell us about the difficulties for you particularly as you go out to different sites in terms of accessibility and what difficulties you have, not just with the language service providers that are giving you these assignments, but for you yourself getting to these assignments. Walk us through those challenges. The Orange County Department of Education is proud to host their 7th Annual Interpreters and Translators Conference, September 29th and 30th, at the Hilton Orange County Costa Mesa in Costa Mesa, California. This conference promotes the incredible work of interpreters and translators, bilingual persons, and staff tasked with providing language access in schools and in the community. Know your path. Each step matters to ensure language access is this year's theme and main focus. Conference sessions and engagements will respond to the core belief that language access is a foundational part of an inclusive and culturally responsive educational ecosystem. Participants will delve into unique opportunities to acquire and refine their skills, learn tips and strategies to enhance their professional practices, keep up to date with the latest trends, laws, and expectations, and explore the use of diverse platforms and tools that can streamline their language service efforts. Language access is a priority in public education, and as interpreters and translators working in the K-12 system are more visible than ever, becoming a substantial part of every educational encounter, it is imperative to professionalize the field through continuous improvement, training, growth, and networking. The Orange County Department of Education Language Services team is at the forefront of providing these professional learning opportunities and experiences for its interpreters, translators, bilingual staff, school administrators, and community liaisons, and is committed to communicating across cultures to provide meaningful language access to their families, students, and the communities they serve. Join them this fall at the 2023 Interpreters and Translators Conference to continue your professional learning and networking. Registration is now open, so head on over to the episode notes to find out more about the Interpreters and Translators Conference hosted by the Orange County Department of Education's Language Services Division, taking place September 29th and 30th. Hope to see you there.
So obviously I don't drive. The cops would get me off the road really quick if I tried. in fact, I fell in love with the Arby's commercial done by Ray Charles for that reason. It was just so perfect. He said, oh, I'm just going to drive down to Arby's and get me a roast beef sandwich. So you better get off the road. And it's like, yes, way to poke a little fun. This is great. And that's the other thing I want to say is people with disabilities love humor just as much as anybody else. And so, but anyway, getting back to the transportation aspect, I depend on paratransit or Uber or Lyft. And paratransit, I know I will have no problem getting a guide dog on board and getting to a place, but the pickup times have to be scheduled a minimum of 24 hours in advance. So if I get a city and a zip code from an agency, that's not going to tell me the address. That's not going to tell me landmarks. That's not going to tell me how many miles. And unfortunately, much like the cab discrimination that occurred in the 1980s and 90s, early 90s, we're seeing this similar discrimination from Uber and Lyft with service animals, which is they have a beautifully written policy that service dogs will be accepted, but certain drivers will pull up and say, oh, well, my family's allergic to dogs. I can't take you. You'll have to call for someone else. Well, obviously, if I do that too often and end up being late, then I have agencies frustrated at me. And I've been blessed not to have too many of those encounters, but I was made aware recently that there are a couple of numbers that you can call if you have service dog problems with that discrimination, which is good. But Sunday Edition from the American Council of the Blind is a podcast, and a few episodes ago, they went through the fact that it really is best to not just accept a refund from Lyft or whatever remedy as the sole remedy, but to write a complaint on the Department of Justice website. And right now, as was the case in the cab discrimination in the 80s, we're going to get a letter that says, you know, we can't get to this case right now. But they were encouraging, keep those letters. And one day when they've got enough cases on their desk, they will see this and they will start work on it. So that's the local travel piece. Now to conferences and such. Because people tried to bring peacocks, iguanas, and other animals onto airplanes, there is now a required form, and the time of which it has to be completed is not consistent across airlines. So some want it 30 days in advance, some want it 3 days in advance. Your vet has to fill out a portion stating that your service dog is a legitimate service dog and is well-behaved and doesn't have rabies and blah, 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 blah. And it has really caused problems for the blindness community. And the schools, in fact, begged the TSA and others not to do this. Because, for instance, there was a social media post shared widely recently of an undergraduate student who had planned a spring break trip. And there was a code entered in the computer that was not fixable, and they had denied her the ability to fly with her dog. So they gave her the choice of getting on the flight without her dog or not taking the flight. And I just want you out there to imagine that you'd planned a really important trip. Maybe it was a business meeting, maybe it was a conference. And all of a sudden, you literally can't board the plane. I don't believe in lawsuits generally, but that just made me sick. Yeah. Because that should not have happened to this young woman. And I have one of my mentors, in fact, his wife is a cane traveler. She was able to board the plane. He was not. So this is not a one-off thing. And we were talking about this the other day, and he said, you know, the organization that has put out this form is seeing the iguanas and the peacocks not getting on the plane. We are just an unfortunate, you know, not flying with our dogs is just an unfortunate consequence of a wider decision. So it's been very different to try and navigate that landscape. And I've been very grateful to COVID for virtual conferencing, particularly for people going to Zoom, because I can actually use the chat feature. GoToWebinar and others. I think any meeting is the only audio conference software that I know of that's accessible. And yet I did not hear of the FCC even considering the accessibility of video conferencing until about a week ago. And they're actually finally going to hold a meeting about it. And I'm sitting there thinking, why didn't this happen 15 years ago?
Wow.
Yeah. So when I'm attending webinars, there's an organization I frequently attend webinars through, and it's frustrating because I have to sit there like a bump on a log if I can't think of the questions ahead of time to email. And then the PowerPoints that are presented in webinars, my screen reader treats them like video. So in other words, I have no access to any of the information coming across the screen in the PowerPoint. And I was very frustrated with a recent webinar. I was delighted when the presenter said she was going to share her slides because she was deliberately skipping over a lot of information. And I have run into some situations, and I've made organizations aware of this, but a quiz question that can only be answered by viewing something on the slide. And in fact, I'm in another group that's not related to interpreting, and I had to reach out and say, hey, the screen reader treats this as video, so could the presenters please send me their slides either before or after the presentation? And it's great because it gives me a chance to just glance through. And I do that. I use it for my own personal viewing, and then off the computer it goes. I don't keep it or anything. I just view it and get rid of it because I know how important copyright is being a librarian's daughter. So, an understanding that would be super helpful. Also, I had to do a drag and drop to match sort of activity for a, what do they call that? Continuing computer-based learning kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, there is a drag and drop keystroke with a screen reader, but I ended up actually getting, my mother was visiting, and I said, okay, I need you to help me with this. And she ended up having to move the mouse for me because the drag and drop keystrokes, we call it keyboard simulation, mouse simulation is the correct term, excuse me, where you're using keys on the keyboard to do what the mouse does, because somebody who's totally blind operates a computer without being able to use either the mouse or the monitor. It's all coming from the keyboard.
What has OPI been able to do for you as a certified interpreter, Jamie, that, like you just mentioned earlier, you know, thankful it through the COVID situation that you're now able to do some of this stuff on remotely. So what has OPI done for you with your particular ability?
I have been able to take up contract positions, and I've actually had one really bad experience. I was employed full-time by a certain organization for a few weeks last summer, and they did send me an accessible laptop and Braille display, but I pulled the Braille display out of the box and I thought, oh my goodness, what brand is this thing? I'd never seen one like it. And then in talking with human resources, I said, did you guys know that this needs to be cleaned every 3 years? At minimum, oh no. And I'm thinking, oh great, this is going to die on me. And in fact, there was a strange policy that a client had where basically they wanted people not to be able to ever be able to look back at notes they had taken. And because of the Scratchpad application I had mentioned, there were some problems there, and I ended up returning to contractor status. So it has allowed me to take notes in the most efficient way that I can. It has allowed me to be professional and give people, again, a good, helpful experience over the phone. And it has also allowed me to be in a level playing field with other interpreters. They're usually expecting someone who can do audio interpretation. And although video is happening more often, in fact, I had a full-time position from about August 2016 through around Labor Day of 2018 that was just wonderful. There was trust. I mean, they provided accommodations, but there was also a lot of trust. So if I said, to my team lead, hey, I'm not feeling well. I need to go take some medicine. I will be back in 20 minutes. I would get, okay, you know, because they knew that I was dependable. And I think it can be too easy for A, me to be chasing accessibility challenges, or B, an organization to be very concerned about what they can and cannot ask me. And that can create unnecessary barriers. And to those out there who are language service providers who hire interpreters, I just want to emphasize to you that candidates with disabilities can be marvelous employees. And just, you know, talk to us about what we need and be able to ask, what do you need, and mean it. And when you follow through, there's going to be a good result. But basically, I have not had, with the OPI, I have not had all the transportation challenges so much. I have been able to choose my working hours, which is nice because I have other appointments with clients sometimes. And it's good to be able to work around those. But I am trying to build up my simultaneous, because there were certain agencies that I checked into who said, we really need someone who can do simultaneous. And it hit me hard when I had to turn down actually an assignment from ACB, the American Council of the Blind. I had somebody who remembered me from, goodness gracious, 10 years ago, I think. And she said, hey, can you do this? I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm just not quite there yet, but I will find you an interpreter. And so I contacted actually a young woman who was my roommate at the IMIA conference in Miami 10 years ago and said, help. And so she was able to help them, because they were kind of getting down to the wire and I felt bad that I couldn't do as much. So I'm open to receiving more tips on how to polish my simultaneous skills. And I have found a speech pool, but often the challenge I run into is I can interpret over the phone or I can listen to the screen reader. So I have to devote specific time to, gee, that term that I kind of got close to, but wasn't perhaps as accurate as I could have been. I need to spend, you know, a few minutes and from my time as a full-time employee, I got a great list of resources that were, you know, reliable from the internet. And I'm always open to receiving more suggestions there. But in fact, I was really excited to see the article that Giovanna Lester published recently about how to find European legal terminology in seconds. But then, you know, oh, how cool is this? And then the other side of me is going, I wonder how accessible this database is. So it's always a two-sided coin. But OPI, I'm free to be myself. And the organization where I was working full-time in those 3 years started having a lot of VRI positions come up. And I have since been able to look at VRI manuals and different things and go, oh my goodness, this definitely requires vision. So, you know, my hope is that there will always be a place for OPI in the industry and that folks won't move as far towards video. I mean, I could totally understand it with something like ASL or maybe the physical therapy appointment where a client is shown exercises, and that would be helpful to have the video. But I love interpreting over the phone because I just show up at the other end of that phone line and people are happy and thankful. And often I get a good dose of perspective, which, you know, keeps me humble. So we all need that every once in a while.
Every once in a while. Absolutely. Jamie, if you had the opportunity to share with potentially other individuals that might be going through some of the challenges that you initially went through as you embarked on your journey into this profession, what would you share with them? What resources would you give them, or what advice would you give them that you've now learned along the way, looking back and your experiences? What would you say to them?
Well, similar to other interpreters, I would say get in touch with your local association and try to find transportation to local events, or if you can work out, if there's a listserv or a group chat or something that you can get on to find rides to conferences. And, you know, also totally think about getting certified, because that's what's going to bring the profession forward, I think. And in fact, right now, right before I found your podcast, I'd gone through a period of discouragement because I felt like I was kind of in the same place I'd been 10 years ago. And I'm a committed Christian, and the Holy Spirit said, okay, what are you going to do about it? And so I set myself a goal of making a few professional contacts. And like I say, one day I was just sitting around and I was like, I wonder if there are any interpreting podcasts out there. And lo and behold, I found you. So also, you know, broaden your horizons a little bit. I'm running into more like attorney client calls and things where I'm needing to learn more legal interpreting to be accurate. So for instance, I took a course on DUI terminology, and not 2 weeks later, there was an incident that literally occurred in the front yard of my apartment. I'm very thankful that nobody got hurt and everything is okay, and they just had to replace a light pole. But there was an individual who couldn't put on his brakes in time because he was impaired while driving. And I was joking with the local police officer, you know, I just took a course two weeks ago to refresh myself on this terminology. I had no idea this was going to happen.
This is not what I was planning on using my new.
Something right in my front yard, but my neighbor saw this guy and got him to roll down his window and said Espanol, and he nodded. And so she brought me out to make sure he was okay, first of all.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. You know, I hear that there's an upcoming education certification. Well, I have an elementary school that is just about within walking distance from here. I would have to learn exactly where it is, but I know the general direction of how to get there. So I'm thinking about that. And then I am working with a friend who needed work, and I had a Braille transcription project that needed doing. So I have often wondered if I should go into Braille transcription. I've dabbled in translation and realized that a lot of the editing and such is just going to take me a lot more time. And I was a language skills interpreter for an attorney back in my Maryville College days. So I was, you know, exposed to the sitting across the glass from the guy on the phone reading the pre-sentencing agreement and different things. So at the time, it really gave me pause because I had next to no background in legal, and I was doing legal translation and some interpreting. And I thought, oh my goodness, I need to get my skills up to speed before I jump back into this. So just keep an open mind. Try as hard as you can to get out of your comfort zone. I've been there, and when discouragement strikes and you want to be where you're comfortable, and being too comfortable, as a bishop once said, is not where a Christian needs to stay. And I think that goes for any human being. You need to jump out of your comfort zone, even if it's slowly crawling out of your comfort zone. So All of this stuff that is common sense, but takes some time to sink in.
What would you say to the conference organizers for, you know, national state events for specifically in the interpreting profession when it comes to creating accessibility for our colleagues that have a different ability?
Well, I'm going to peg sign language interpreters for a moment. I love the fact that you guys are available at so many events. That's terrific. Now, if I have attended conferences where I asked for the handouts ahead of time and I got them, and that was fabulous. The other thing, again, going back to the on-screen stuff, just not always translating, there are sometimes event codes at conferences that, again, show on the screen but are not verbalized to me. So I attended CHOA last, the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta Interpreting Symposium, which was fabulous, really enjoyed it. But I had to bring to the presenter's attention, hey, I'm going to need somebody to verbalize these codes so that I can write them down. And also, I have found it very helpful in a completely unfamiliar environment to have maybe someone who's attending similar workshops who could just kind of check in with me every once in a while. I'm fairly independent with a guide dog, but you know, if it's an unfamiliar building and I have not had the time to go in ahead of time and clicker train the dog to locate certain doors or, you know, talk about how the building is laid out, that's nice. And, you know, finding roommates who are willing to spend some time, you know, bonus with me when any of my dogs come out of harness, they're great big puppies. And when they're in an unfamiliar environment, it's important to build in a little playtime. Just being aware of little things that could be super helpful, or, you know, pointing people towards the gluten-free. I'm gluten-free now. I've found it helpful to deal with some chronic pain. So, and asking people, you know, one of the, my favorite moments from that 2013 conference was a sign language interpreter coming up to me saying, "Where can I take you?" And I was, I still remember, I was balancing my Braille tablet and the little, you know, tote bag you get at a conference and a lunchbox on one arm while tentatively urging my dog forward because I had to hold his harness with my other hand. And it was like, yes, you understand. Yes, I need to go somewhere quiet where I can have a phone conversation and eat my lunch. And so we went up the elevator and I felt bad because I made her late for her meeting. So, you know, that was like, darn, I'm sorry. But she said, oh, they'll totally understand. And
yeah, I'm sure that was the
such a relief.
I bet. Yeah. And I think it teaches us as well as we're in these conferences to sort of be more present, right? Mm-hmm. And be aware of our surroundings. And right. That individual might have been doing that. She would have not seen that,
right. You
know, maybe you could. Right. Right. You could need some help. And so being able to offer that help, that's huge.
And absolutely ask someone, asking before doing is hugely important. And that piece of advice goes out to people at conferences, but also to parents of blind children. No matter how hard your kids complain, no matter how much work it takes, if you have a child who is not learning Braille, but their vision's getting worse, advocate, advocate, advocate. The National Association for Parents of the Visually Impaired is out there for a reason. Maybe you don't have a local chapter. Maybe you need to establish one. Don't be afraid to reach out and don't be afraid to ask, you know, would you like me to put a straw in your cup? Or would you like me to describe what's on the buffet line or whatever? Ask and be open. Another thing that is super helpful for folks who are visually impaired is to describe your photos on social media. And I've actually been known to unfollow groups and things if there are constant undescribed photos. And it doesn't have to be elaborate. You know, you've heard of the Facebook algorithm, for instance. That is very generalized. For instance, they'll say, photo may contain food, or photo may contain person, child, and sunglasses, or person and beard. It's very basic. So even in your comments, just, you know, you can write capital P, capital D, colon, you know, photo description, and then say, a young woman is sitting next to a German shepherd on the grass, and he's smiling for the camera or whatever. Just enough to let those who cannot see the photo know what's going on. And I have a church friend who's particularly good at it. And I love the photos she puts up of her pets because she is super creative and always comes up with adorable descriptions. But any description is appreciated. So that's super important.
The simple things.
Yes.
Amy, if you could give some words of encouragement to anyone that is walking, particularly your similar path, what would those words of encouragement be? Perhaps it's a new generation of language professionals with different abilities. Yeah. What would those words of encouragement be to them?
Again, learn to advocate for yourself. Learn exactly what accommodations you need and don't settle for less. Be open, even though it's very tiring at times and very frustrating at times, to educating the public about what you need. And maybe even try to find some local Braille transcribers, because maybe you're in college and you want to take up a second language, but you need a textbook. And, you know, it's going to take a good 6 months or more to transcribe a book with fewer errors. You know, Braille transcription, just like translation, if you run into a rush job, okay, yeah, we'll get it done. But it's, and I'm not a certified Braille transcriber, I'm just speaking from experience with what others have told me, they'll get it done, but it may be full of errors because the turnaround time is so quick. And Lord knows that's not the product people want to put out there. So, and also, you know, check with your disability services office if you're at a university and ask if there's a club for students with different abilities, or if there is another visually impaired student on campus. I mean, who knows? You could be study buddies. You could call them up and say, I've had a really hard day because there's this construction and it was, you know, hard to get around, but, you know, it's been such a blessing. Speaking of construction, the local joke is UNC stands for the University of Neverending Construction. And one of the reasons I loved working a guide dog is that they can help you go around a construction site. And but I remember being on campus before I was a guide dog traveler. I was a cane traveler for 20 years. And again, going back to teachers and parents of blind children, mobility skills, big time. You know, can your student or child get from point A to point B reliably, whether that's within an elementary school building or from one building to another on a high school campus? Or can they describe to a sighted classmate, okay, I'm going to need you to do sighted guide and you need to stand a half a step in front of me. I will take your elbow and we need to walk down to the vocational building or whatever. Being assertive is so important, and just knowing, being willing to reach out and find a peer group or a mentor or any of these other things, and admit when you need help. You know, sometimes that's easier said than done. I mean, as an undergrad, goodness knows how many books I ended up, they had some custom textbooks and I ended up having to scan books. And I would often ask a classmate who had not written in their book, hey, can I borrow your book for about 2 days and I'll get it back to you before Friday. I just need to scan in these readings that we're going to have to do. So, you know, build, whether it's a study buddy system, whether it's a peer network, whether it's reaching out to other professionals, just go for it, you know, be open to new possibilities.
I love that. Such great advice. Jamie, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today and learning from you and how we as language professionals can help each other, no matter what our backgrounds, no matter what our abilities. And I appreciate you so very much for coming on this show to sharing your story and just sharing your information with all of our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Recording started. Stop recording button. Alt followed by S.
One sound I wanted to add in, though this device is an efficient means of creating Braille, the Perkins Brailler is very loud. So, not ideal for phone interpreting.
Hey, thanks for sticking around till the very end. If you'd like to connect with me, head on over to the website, brandtheinterpreter.com, and click on the Connect with Me tab. You can also stay connected on social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, as Brand the Interpreter, or Mireya Perez on LinkedIn. Till next time.